Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast, and I'm starting things before anyone could start their bullshit.
Joining me, motherfucker.
Joining me, we've got the PartyCast crew, Tim Ekibis, Pernell Vaughn, Chris Taylor, Brooke is back, and Aki
Brooke's
is here.
Back.
Brooke!
Hey. Brooke! Oh, man, how much did I have to pay you guys to cheer?
$50. I said check and PayPal.
This is a fair price. It's a bargain.
Yeah, Pernell's the treasurer. He handles all that business.
Nice. I paid more for less, that's for sure.
It's a bargain. It's an absolute steal.
But how's everyone doing? Brooke, how are you? How have you been?
You know, I've been pretty good. I can't complain. I've famously been doing so well.
How you were in you the wilderness. Been?
I was, yeah. I rented a cabin in the woods, and I took my PC, and I took my Switch.
Technology there.
Took my PS4, and it was actually really relaxing. It was really cool.
Sometimes you just need to get away from technology and bring all your technology.
Yes, I had to unplug to plug in. This guy gets it.
Yeah, as someone who has gone on a similar trip and brought his PS1 with its little portable screen, ooh. I understand. Yeah.
Awesome. Respect.
God damn world.
I don't get it. I don't like leaving my house, though, so I guess it's understandable.
I like leaving the house as long as other people aren't where I go.
Okay, I agree, but there's always goddamn people everywhere. They're like cockroaches.
Gotta go to
I used to... go ahead.
No, I didn't, but Pocono Mountains...
Poconos. What the hell is in the Poconos of any worth at all?
Major.
No people.
That's what's up there.
5 out of 5 for names.
Yeah, Pocono.
It sounds more tropical than it is.
Yeah, it's just it's mountains. Yeah, it's shitty. Bad. It's not
right.
It's not good at all. I mean, I think there's Bushkill Falls. Those are pretty cool. Some waterfalls, but
don't listen to these cats. Nature is the shit. You know,
I just said Bushkill Falls was cool. And you're like shitting all over me. It's like, don't listen to him.
You said Bushkill Falls like it was like a consolation prize. It's like, hey, nature sucks, but they got Bushkill Falls.
No, the Poconos sucks, but Bushkill Falls is pretty dope.
I'll give you that just to be safe, because you were trying to trash nature. What happened?
Well, nature sucks. Yeah. There's bugs there.
But so hey, I'm not talking about free. If I could purge nature of the pest insects,
you would have large problems than the insects.
Okay, how about I could keep them from attacking and bothering me specifically?
So what I'm getting here is that the Poconos are the Purple Mountains travesty.
That was good.
Thank you. I'm glad you got. I'm glad you appreciated my my patriotic joke.
Yeah,
well,
sounds like
it was a good episode.
No, it wasn't. Don't lie.
Be too shining. Shit.
I'm on here. We can still save this. I
no,
don't
we
know
can't.
How, but it's possible.
No, we can't.
Hey, as long as I'm here, anything's possible.
Tim, how was your week?
It was my kid's birthday.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, I'm going on a string of multiple back-to-back-to-back, like, crazy busy days where, like, Friday night I hosted a stream watching my first movie, and then Saturday was my kid's birthday party, and then, you know, then I host D&D that night, and then all day Sunday it was my kid's actual birthday, so, like, I was his, you know, personal yes you get to do everything you want today, and then I had, like, overtime yesterday, and then I had overtime today, and I got, like, quite sick Saturday night and had a lot of trouble sleeping and, like, just felt like the garbage.
Not to cut into your I'm sick thing that you're talking about, but I'm playing my first thing of D&D tomorrow.
What the
Ooh, fun. Ooh. Awesome.
I was about to yell at you for interrupting to talk about you, but it was relevant, so congratulations.
Yeah, well, that's the only reason I brought it up was because he mentioned D&D. And before I could talk about it, he already moved on to the next thing.
Joe is slowly lowering down the water bottle.
Yeah.
Spraying.
I plan a reborn elf, so it's going to be cool, I think. I don't know.
Yeah,
I've never played D&D.
It usually ends up being cool, as long as the people you're playing with are cool.
Yeah. I don't know any of them.
All right. Oh, God. Mileage may vary.
The DM will hate you.
Okay, I want to hear how this goes. Tim, I heard that your kids, the people who came to your kids' parties, are little dorks and nerds, and that worked out pretty nicely.
It did. Yeah, it was fantastic. Because this is his first like real party that he has gotten to have in his life, because once he reached kind of real party phase, then everything was not safe to be around other people. So, like, I've had very little opportunity to meet other, I almost called them opposing parents. Like, we're not competing.
Yeah, if you're both parents, I'm pretty sure you are competing somehow.
Somehow. I hadn't really gotten to meet, you know, other parents and, like, his actual friends, because he moved to a different classroom this year and had a totally different set of kids that he was with. So, like, they got to come out, and, yeah, it was definitely like, yeah, I can see why you are friends with these people. Like,
that's awesome.
There was one girl in particular I'm just like, holy shit, you're like the girl version of my child. Like, this is so weird. That was great. It was like hectic and stressful, because it's just like a lot going on, you know, meeting new people and kids running around and trying to remember everyone's names and socialize and keep my kid under control. But you know, it was a blast and he had a great time. So
that's awesome. You know, I'm doing the math over here. And if you're anything like me, you get through something really stressful like that, that has like a lot of prep involved, like prepping for the kid's birthday, getting through the kid's birthday party. And then you just get sick. It's like your body's like, okay, we're fucking done. Yeah, safe.
It was a good run, but
now I will let the illness wash over you. I held it back for you so we could get through this thing.
Yeah. Could be a parent superpower, man. I can see it.
Absolutely. Yeah, I took him to a movie on Sunday that was not Doctor Strange, because that would have ended very poorly. I can attest to that after actually seeing Doctor Strange the next day. But, you know, I took him to see a movie, and about 10 minutes in, I took a little nappy-wappy in the theater. It was very comfortable and dark in there.
What was wrong with Doctor Strange?
I haven't seen it yet.
It is a hard PG-13. It is much more creepy and violent than a PG-13 movie I have seen in a long time.
And that's a bad thing? That sounds fantastic.
It is. I loved it. But for my child, who in particular, the number one thing he is afraid of on this planet is zombies and zombie-like things. There was enough, really? Yes, jump scares and creepy stuff in that movie that I think we would
have. Sam Raimi, right?
Yes.
Yeah. It is. People are die in the film too, like,
don't give away deaths. I mean,
no, I'm not gonna give away
deaths. Well, no, Purnell, I'm yelling at Purnell for asking about
it. No, I mean, I am jump scares, no buffoon too. Here
I was gonna say Sam Raimi will put a jump scare in a cereal commercial.
Yes, he will.
Are there a lot of jump scares? Because those are the one thing I don't like.
Not
that
a
is
lot,
the cheapest dog shit on the planet.
Asking about deaths because if no one actually dies, I don't care if it's a main character or not, but if no one dies, jump scares are kind of
It's like, you have to ask me one question at a time here, crew.
Jump in, die.
One, it's not like a ton of jump scares, and it's something that I feel that Sam Raimi does well and doesn't overutilize. Two, characters get fucking brutally murdered in this movie, and that is all I will say, but my mouth was agape at certain moments in the film. And mind you, I really enjoyed it. It was, but you know, considering like almost every Marvel movie is PG-13, because you know they say the S word a couple times, and you know there's general comic cartoon violence, but this, you know, it's still generally okay for a little kid. Like, he's seen every other freaking Marvel movie, I think, like, no problem. But this, nope, no way.
Don't give him the
wow.
Yeah.
He looks pretty young. How old is he again?
He is now officially 7 years old.
Oh, wow. Yeah, he's really young. I'm bad at eyeballing children's ages, so I thought maybe he was 9 or 10 from the pictures. I don't know.
I'm bad at eyeballing everyone's ages at this point.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, anybody 30 or under looks like a child to me.
Yeah, basically. That is where I'm at as well. Like,
yeah,
anybody
to that point.
It was like 2 years ago, I would have bumped that down to like 25. Like, if you're less than 25, I don't know how old you are because you look 17.
Yeah.
But like, that's rapidly raising.
I know, right? Jesus.
It's like, if you're over 30, you better have wrinkles or I don't know how old you are. I'm just
going to
guess.
Woohoo!
No somewhere wrinkles. Between 16 and 15.
I'm happy to say I don't really have any facial wrinkles. I have like a dent in my forehead from, I think, just being fat, but like no actual wrinkles.
You're also bald, though.
Yeah, bald and bearding adds a lot of years.
Yeah.
Well, if I shave my head, I look like I'm in my 20s.
Yeah, I think people think that I'm older than I am, but
I lost my hair in my early like to mid 20s, so I've been 40 for like 15 years now.
Yeah.
Oh, you poor schmuck.
The number catches up this year. Like, oh, finally I'm as old as I look.
I feel older than I am.
I don't know how anybody could not feel old in this day and age. So
yeah,
I feel like that's not even an age thing anymore. That's just like how rich are you? Well, you're this tired then.
I'm not rich, so I'm very tired. And I think everyone is fairly tired. So should we just dive into the reviews?
Wait. Not too I haven't been here in a few weeks, and I just wanted to say at least one Elden Ring thing. Just let me
know. Yes, let's hear it.
Okay. I just wanted really quickly, if anyone has a very favorite message from another player in Elden Ring, you know, they'll leave the messages, anybody can read them.
Yeah.
Do either of you have a very favorite message in Elden Ring? Because I do now. As of the last few weeks.
Man, it's been a while. I was like screenshotting some of my favorites for a while, but I don't have them at the tip of my brain.
Oof. Well, I'll never forget the first one I saw, and I never played a game like this before, so it just made me laugh, and the guy was like, time for Elden Ring at the very beginning.
Yeah.
That was solid gold. I love that. But then a couple weeks ago, I really wanted to tell you guys about this next time I got to be on the show with y'all. I was on a cliff. And it's one of those messages at the very end of the cliff where you're like, there's nothing here. Like, there's not going to be anything here if I jump off the cliff. This is the middle of nowhere. But I had to go read the message, and it said Elden Ring ahead. And I
you jumped.
I thought we just jumped for posterity's sake, just to say. But and it wasn't there. The Elden Ring was not ahead. But that just made me laugh so hard. Like, even before I was jumping, I was like, I'm reading like Elden Ring ahead. Oh my God, that's so good. I like freaked out, I screamed. I brought it up like 5 times. Carrie's like, shut up about the Elden Ring ahead guy. And that just brought such a light and joy to my life that week. Can't wait to tell you guys about that one.
That's awesome.
I love seeing meme players online, like the people who are like, yeah, I changed my character's name to Jump With Me. And I would go into someone's level and spawn and just jump off the edge. And everyone would follow me.
That's awesome.
Like, the community is ridiculous with like their weird role plays and inside jokes and stuff like that. Yeah. Like, but people will just go along with it. Like, you know, it's fun. I love it.
Oh, I guess I have some news. Wait a minute. We're going to do reviews, right?
I am filled with news. No, not anymore.
I'll be very brief. I got a new cat.
Oh, details.
I saw that. Congrats.
She's a little black kitty. She's about 3 years old. Her name's Moxie. And
so you have
she
a void.
A old, huh?
You have a void.
Yeah, a little yellow-eyed void.
Nice.
And she's very tiny, too. She's like kitten size, but she's 3. And we just adopted her. And she has, like, her left side is shaved because they had to remove, like, this tumor.
Oh.
Yeah, so she's still, like, she's bald, too, just like me. In like the least attractive way possible. And but yeah, she's very nice. She's getting used to life around here. Her and Wilfred are getting along, kind of. They're still like
cool.
They still like sit a little far apart and eyeball each other a lot, but you know, they're both tolerant, which is more than we could hope for. And given like some of my other friends' horror stories about how their cats like forget each other and then start fighting like randomly. Yeah.
Oh, cats.
So, in the last few years, I've gone from 0 cats to 2, so getting up there.
Yeah, you're catching up to me, Chris.
Yeah, another, you know, maybe 5 years or so, we'll be up to 13 cats.
Another dozen, and you'll pass me. That's all you need is a dozen. Yeah, so, yeah, review. Like, should we get to them?
Yeah. I guess.
All right, first game to talk about tonight is Trek to Yomi, developed by Leonard Menchiari, I think, and Flying Wild Hog, published by Devolver Digital, released May 5th on Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4, PS5, and PC for $19.99. As a vow to his dying master, the young swordsman Hiroki is sworn to protect his town and the people he loves against all threats. Faced with tragedy and bound to duty, the lone samurai must voyage beyond life and death to confront himself and decide his path forward. Tim and Aki, you both played this. Who wants to start?
I love it. There we go.
Okay, Tim, what do you have to say?
I like it as well.
You don't love it? What's wrong with you?
No, I don't love it. I mean, like, I'm not going
fucking
to hate on it.
Shame on you.
Wow, okay, jeez. Why do you love it? Start off, lead with the love.
Okay, for those of you who don't know, which is probably a good chunk of you, Yomi is basically the land of the dead. So now you can get a gist of what this game's about just from the title. Yay! It's fantastic. You play as a samurai child at first, and then after basically the tutorial that teaches you how to play the game.
What is that word again?
You murder 2 dozen people as a small child.
Yeah, you're like 8 years old. You can barely hold the fucking sword. The sword's about as big as you, and you kill like 20, 30 fucking bandits.
It's kind of funny because they're like, no, stay here. Be safe. Like, what they mean be safe is then the bandits will be safe if we keep this monster.
Yeah. Kid is brutal. And there's difficulties. I played it on the easiest. I don't know about you. What did you play it on?
The one up. So none of them say normal, but I feel like it was the one. It's above the one above the easiest one.
Okay. How easy was the combat normal in that?
It was not difficult.
Okay. I don't think that really changes anything.
Yeah.
I
died a few times.
So did I. So.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Not many, but there was a few. So first you start off with the boy, and then suddenly you're grown up as the man version of him. And
Version.
Yeah. Well, he's like 8 at the start, and now he's like in his late 20s, early 30s, something like that.
Yeah, and
check his hairline.
Yeah. That doesn't work that well.
Check the crow's nest, the crow's feet.
Can't see that close. Some bandits have started attacking again, but they've been destroying entire cities. So you go out because the girl you love is basically the leader of this place, and she's like, if these people die, we all die, because it's basically the farmers for the city and stuff. So you go out and you kill a bunch of people, which is really fun. And then you come back and you kill a bunch of people. And then you go to Yomi and you kill a bunch of people. It's fantastic.
Honestly.
What? Be honest.
I was just going to say, honestly, though, like, even though this sounds like this is a game from the hero's perspective, I'm like, wow, those bandits really leveled up from 30 of them getting massacred by a child to, like, now they're destroying cities. Like, kind of like to see this from the bandit's perspective.
Yeah. So this game is it's kind of in this little hyper-specific but kind of very, I don't know, general genre where it's like, you know, it's sort of a forced perspective action adventure game, but it makes me think of like, nobody played Song of Iron, which I reviewed last year and really liked, but it's kind of like that sort of a setup, which was kind of like Inside, but with combat, which was kind of like Limbo, but better. I'm trying to think like what defines it from like a normal like side-scrolling action adventure game, and I think it's just more how they use like the perspective and the depth of the background to really kind of be very cinematic and tell a story and have like lots of details in the environment for you to gawk at as you're walking by.
Well, I think more than that, it's also the style of combat is different too. Mm-hmm. And you can dodge around, you can block, and you can attack. You can also do things like counters, which
Dropping bits!
Quite often, not always, but a good chunk of the time, it'll just instantly kill people, which is fantastic.
You want to know what else is fantastic? Latino Heat just dropped 100 biddies. Latino Heat, thank you so much. Always appreciate having you here.
Back
to the review.
Nothing makes you feel more like a samurai badass, like instantly killing an enemy. That is just so sweet. It's all in black and white as well.
Yeah,
we should point out it's a very old samurai movie-esque style. It is. I love it so much.
Yeah, they're going for that the Kurosawa classic samurai style.
The best is what we're going for.
Everything is in black and white. It is all Japanese dialogue with subtitles,
or is it just strictly black and white?
No, it's pure black and white.
Yeah, black and motherfucking white.
It's so beautiful.
No hints of color. Yeah, it looks really nice, and that is really, I feel like, kind of the drawing point of this game is that like the environments and levels they've crafted are really something to look at. They're really detailed.
Another cool thing about that is sometimes. Like, if you're inside a building, sometimes there's, you know, doors and shit in between the character and you watching it. So instead of seeing the enemies in your character, you're seeing their shadows and you still have to fight and stuff. It's so fucking cool. I love it.
Yeah, they do some cool, like, stuff with the foreground and background and stuff of the game. Generally, so you can run around, like, kind of in a 3D, like, all direction movement until you're in combat, and then it locks you to a straight 2D plane for the combat encounters.
It's like Tails.
Even when you're done with that encounter, that little area where that encounter took place is a 2D plane.
Yeah,
purely.
Like, the game is still like pretty linear. Like there is little side rooms and stuff to go off to and find upgrades for your like health and stamina, and
which you want
really and ammunition and stuff like that. sometimes some side rooms have save points in them.
Very useful. You can only use those once, by the way.
Yes. Yeah.
they're gone. They're shrines.
These little shrines, you hit them once because they refill your health. They save your game. You can, and like you have to manually hit them. I have to emphasize that. They don't automatically save if you walk by them because there's a lot of them, I think, kind of due to being all black and white. Sometimes they didn't just jump out from the screen at me. Like I was just kind of looking at... I missed several. And like I would die and go back and I'd be like, I bet I missed a checkpoint or two here. And sure as shit, I was just like, okay, yeah, I see. I was looking at this thing over here and just kind of missed it in with everything else. But some of them are like a little bit off to the side and you can just run by them. But that's fine.
There's a lot of them, so it's perfectly okay.
there's plenty of them, and like it's not like I'm talking like, oh no, I have to, it takes me a minute to get back to where I was instead of
30 that.
Or 20 seconds, you know, and that's if I missed a checkpoint. So
they're generous with the checkpoints, it sounds like.
Absolutely.
And you don't always even get restarted at a checkpoint. There are some areas, especially in puzzle areas, where if you die, you just start at the beginning of that little section.
Yeah.
Which is, there's no checkpoint there. It just gives you an automatic one, which is really nice. If you close the game, you do start at the actual checkpoint. And you have to get back there. But
so it's a non-save checkpoint. It's like an auto-save, one of those kind of things.
Yeah, it's a temporary one, yeah.
Yeah, so the game starts out with you kind of going through just some pretty bog-standard, like, medieval-y Japanese villages, and then gets a bit more gets more fantastical as you move on, and darker as you trek ever closer to Yomi. And the combat is, for me at least, was a lot of parrying. I was just like, yep, I'm just gonna go for the parry, get that instant stab and go. And they give you other stuff, like they give you other combos and some other abilities, but for the most part, I was just like counter stab. And that was like the one part of the game where I felt was like a little monotonous, just because like like, there's not that much difference between the guys in like chapter one and the things you're killing in like chapter five. It's a lot of that same combat stuff, and I was sticking to the same basic things. So that part didn't really engage me as much. I don't think it's terrible. I don't think it's bad. I mean, it's certainly cool to counter a guy and stab him through, and you feel like a badass when there's four guys running at you and you can cleanly execute all of them and do the cool moves. But it was still just kind of like, basic, bunch of guys, it's okay. It was mainly like the environments that like really caught my eye in this game.
Aki, your thoughts?
I like the instant kills. There's more than one of them. Even if you hit them at the same place, there's a whole bunch of different types. There's also various kind of sword moves you can use. Mm-hmm. That you get those through other collectibles that you can pick up.
Yeah, okay. I was wondering if those were some. I felt like you get some at like certain points in the game, and
you
some
get a couple that way.
And some you have to like find in side rooms.
Yeah, 80% or more of them you have to find in side rooms. I missed one in the entire game, and it drives me nuts.
Gotcha.
But even those moves, you can get kills with that, and they're different than, you know, your assassinations or standard just slashy slashy, which is it's really cool when, especially if you're like me and you grew up on, you know, samurai films, this is fantastic. And all the moves are done properly. Like, this isn't, you know, your stereotypical, oh, this is medieval Europe, watch these people watch the Witcher fight. That's not how people fought realistically, because that would get you killed. The people in this game, they fight like you would expect people who actually know what the fuck they're doing to fight, which is really nice to me.
And it sounds like it's got that Bushido Blade kind of thing where instant kills can come out of nowhere.
You have a life bar, so you're not going to get instant killed.
Well, I mean, on them.
They're in deep shit.
Yeah, as long as you can parry, you can instantly kill them.
Yeah, and I felt like the parry was pretty generous. So,
and there's abilities you can get for upgrades that make it even more generous.
Yeah, it's very playable, like, if nothing else. Like, it's not a super, like, the combat is not demanding that, like, you're going to struggle getting the hang of it and not be able to progress. Like, you will be able to progress in the game, even on slightly more difficult difficulties. I want to make, go ahead. What did you play it on?
I played it on the Xbox. On the Series X.
Oh, okay. Did you have, like, frame rate issues? Because mine
I had a few, but not many.
Yeah,
it wasn't a big issue.
That was like it was very noticeably not running at 60, and usually I don't notice these things in games. I'm not that much of a frame rate guy, but it, like, for some reason it bugged me. Like, early on, I was kind of like, are they trying to stutter, like, the frame rate to make it more film-like? But then I would go into an area with, like, maybe less going on in the background, and suddenly it would, like, smooth out, and I'm like, oh, wait, no, it is supposed to be a smooth 60, and it definitely was not for me throughout.
I think the reason for that is, especially on older software, is probably a lot to do with all the fire and lighting mechanics the game has, because especially at the beginning there tends to be a lot of places that are on fire because bandits are pricks, and so that's a lot for the system, I'm sure, to handle.
You both played on Series, didn't you?
We both. I'm on X.
I didn't have anywhere near as much stuttering as you seem to have.
It wasn't like stuttering. It was just more of like
slowdown.
It was not even a slowdown. It's just like, this is running below 60, very, like, much closer to 30 is what I was seeing.
I probably wouldn't have noticed that. My eyes are bad.
Well, your eyes are good enough to have enjoyed this game. So for $20, what are your thoughts?
It's only $20?
Yeah.
I thought it was 30. Yeah. Nope,
$19.99.
I was going to say it was worth it at 30, but yeah. So obviously it's worth it at 20. And yes, it's on fucking Game Pass, Joe. God.
It's on Game Pass. It's
play
an
it on Game,
game.
Pass. Yeah. Just I. Yeah.
You no. Probably, no. Don't just play it on Game Pass. Go buy it. This one deserves your money.
Yeah.
This is, I fucking love this. And before we leave off,
some of the collectibles that we talked about, some of them are, you know, health upgrades, stamina upgrades, new abilities you can use. But there's also a whole bunch of them that are about, again, Japanese culture, and it's fantastic. So you get to learn a lot about Yomi if you're collecting all the collectibles. And
are there Gundam models?
Sadly, no.
I'm not interested.
I can get, there's a game on Steam that I can I can talk you into that has good models in
it. Oh God,
I can have this conversation too, Joe.
No, we are not getting into this conversation. We have way more games to talk about. Aki, I know you're jumping off to do some modeling, literally putting models together.
More Gunpla, woohoo! Epion.
Any final words?
This is probably going to be my game of the year.
Wow.
For this year.
That is high praise.
Nice.
Yeah, I don't usually have a game of the year. I love this. I love everything about this. Please go buy it. It is so fantastic. And like it only you said, takes,
please. We better do it.
Yeah, I don't say please very often.
I don't use this word lightly.
Please. No, not at all.
I'm scared.
The game can be beaten in like 6 to 8 hours even, and you need to play it a few times because there's a few different endings that you can get, and you can't just save scum, sadly. So go buy it, go play it, you'll love it, I promise, or you're not getting your monies back, but still, you'll love it. Anyways, totally. That's all. That's all I have to say. Awesome. I just want to praise the game more.
No, nice. You can't, because we have other games to talk about. Next game to talk about is called Dorf Romantik, developed and published by Tokana Interactive, released April 28th, out of Steam Early Access for $13.99. Dorf Romantik is a peaceful building strategy and puzzle game where you create a beautiful and ever-growing village landscape by placing tiles, explore a variety of colorful biomes, discover and unlock new tiles, and complete quests to fill your world with life. Tim, what's going on in this game?
Right now, I'm trying to place a plains tile to fulfill a quest over here where I have to... a field. That's what I'm putting down. Yeah, it's a really cool game I've actually been playing. I am usually not one who is playing games during the podcast. But
you've been playing this during the podcast?
I have been playing this because it is it is relaxing enough and, you know, not quite so intensive on my brain that I can, and you know, it's not like a fast-paced game that I can sit here and like talk, I you know, do that review and you know, place tiles at the same time. I'm gonna put this one down and then I'll start talking about it. All right. Fantastic. I'm gonna pause.
It looks very tabletop like
oh, it's so nice. So yeah, this is a puzzle game. This isn't just like a straight like, oh, kind of map builder experimental game where you're just kind of building something up to look pretty. Like there is strategy and puzzle solving strategies to use in this game. So basically you start out, you're on a large like hexagonal grid with like hexagonal spots on them. So you start out with just like this basic like plot of grass, and the game feeds you pieces with different terrain features on them. Like fields, buildings, windmills, train tracks, rivers, ponds, forests, and they're all like there's a huge variety to what kind of details you can have on a particular tile, because basically each side of the hex could be something different. They don't give you like six different terrains on one tile. They don't do that, but it's like, okay, these two sides over here are a forest and these two are like grassland. And there's like one building over here and then a grass piece on the other side. And you just start, you know, like you can play this game one handed with a mouse. So, you know, you can do all kinds of fun stuff with your other hand. If you want, I don't know. So
like, what's the goal of the game? Like, what are you supposed to do?
You are chasing a score. So certain tiles, so you get scored based actually on how well, on a few different things, but one of them is like how well the tiles match up with the tiles you put next to them. So there is a strategy with saying like, okay, I'm going to match up. This has got some forests, some grassland and some buildings on it. And you want it to have those elements on each side, because then you get a better score. And if you surround a tile with each of the matching, you know, perfectly match it, you get like a perfect perfect tile bonus. But some tiles come with a goal on them. Like there's one on my screen right now, which I have to add at least 105 trees to this forest to fulfill the quest. So I need to keep attaching forest tiles that connect to my existing forest until I get up to 105 trees. Then I clear the quest. And then what it does, so you actually start out with a limited number of deck of tiles. So it starts you off with like 60, maybe. What, how many do I have right now? I have 56, but I fulfilled a few quests. I'm a little ways onto this map. When you fulfill a quest, you gain score and it adds more tiles to your deck. And the game ends when you run out of tiles to place. So it is in your best interest for keeping the game going and getting a higher score to keep clearing those quests, keep getting score, and keep getting more tiles added into your deck so you can just keep going. And, you know, it's pleasing from a gameplay perspective and that, like, okay, I have to sit here and think and strategize and be like, okay, you know, I have one village over here where I have to hit exactly 13 houses, which is different than adding at least 13 houses. I have to hit the number exactly or I fail the quest. So I have to think, I have to have space over there so that I can add houses to it, but be careful what I add to it so that I don't add too many houses to it. Like this, and like placing rivers and train tracks can be really tricky because they have different rules, especially the rivers, and I haven't quite completely figured it out yet, the bodies of water, like what tiles you can place next to them. Like they need like little bits of water. Like the game does limit you in some way with those two particular tile sets, and that like they, like the game has to fit. Like it can't like just like smash it in. Like it has to work. Like there are train track tiles that have like an end of the track on them, where you can have the track end, and you can have like there's train stations that go over water, so you can have the trains go over the water. And it's just all very pleasing to like put it all together and kind of see this world expand and grow, like as you're playing a game and putting it all together. Like it is visually satisfying and it is mentally satisfying because you are finishing these quests and you know, chasing a higher score and trying to do better and better and better. And also, like, as you kind of hit like some overarching goals for like the whole game, like, oh well, I laid down 100 tiles, you start unlocking new tiles to use, and that can change up your games as you go. Like I just unlocked a fjord not too long ago. That was the most recent thing. Like while we were talking on this podcast, I unlocked the fjord.
Nice.
And the cool thing is like once you know, you come to the end of a game and like your score is registered and it tells you like your time. Like my first couple games were like, you know, 30, 40 minutes a piece. You then have the option of basically just going into free play. So if you just want to keep building on that map, like without worrying about score and just making like a big pretty world, you can just fucking do that. And it's just like a really cool, chill game.
This sounds like you enjoyed this one too. So $13.99 on it. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's definitely worth a buy, and I think it's, you know, it's something that a lot of people are gonna dig. If you're just looking for a, I see right now I'm trying to place this fucking water tile and it won't go the way I think it should go. There's still a bit of a mystery to me. I think I understand why, but oh wait, no, I could put it there. Okay, now I see. All right.
awesome.
I'm thinking about it.
Very interactive review.
You got to be careful about where you put down water, because then you have to deal with that water for the rest of the game. I'm going to put it over there. Yeah, and it's shit.
It's shit. I thought you liked
it. No, I do like it. I just remembered something else I wanted to say about Yomi. I'll say it on my way out. Like it's really satisfying. It's really accessible. It's easy to play. Like like I said, you're just playing on the mouse. It's like, you know, you just, you know, right click. What does right click do again? Oh, that rotates the map. Scroll wheel, like, you know, zooms in and out, or like quickly rotates the piece. I knew that, right? Yeah. So yeah, it's really easy to play with one hand and really intuitive. So, you know, you can be eating a snack, drinking a beverage, some coffee. It's got some really nice, relaxing music. And yeah, I think it's a lot of fun and really interesting to play. And yeah, I recommend quite a bit.
All right. Well, that is it for you, Tim. Thank you, as always, for being here. I know you wanted to say some more about Yomi. So,
yeah.
What are your final words on Trek to Yomi?
Last thing about Yomi. So the game is in black and white, and they need some fucking subtitle options in that game because the subtitles are also white. And there are some scenes where, like, someone is talking, and I just couldn't fucking read what they were saying at all because it was white on white. Wow. They need, like, some kind of drop shadow or box around it or the option to make it a different color. I know that would take away from some of the aesthetic of the game, but it would make sure that this – because there were some points where I just gave up on reading because I just can't read that. Like, I just can't read it. That's a thing that's, you know – Hopefully something they can do to the game. To note that that is something that I think really needs to be addressed in that one. But that's it. That's my last thought.
Cool.
Yeah. But cool, yeah, I need five railroad pieces and no more than five
railroad pieces.
I'm gonna put this somewhere over here. I'm gonna have to save this game and come back.
Ride
to
the choo choo.
Yeah, because I wanna go night night.
Choo choo go night night train.
I was at work for 13 hours, then like got home.
Oh, and my,
like,
god!
Sat down at the desk here, like literally right before we started.
And Purnell was a minute late.
That's fucking that guy.
Come on, Purnell.
Seriously, get it together, man.
I'm over here naming my new reaction Pern fan 420, and this is the thanks I get. Give me a break.
Rethink your life choices.
The best part is Brooke is an emote in our chat, and it's the SML Pern fan 420.
I asked for Pernell fan 420, but
I didn't know that. That actually makes me smile a bit.
See? And this is weeks ago.
Doesn't matter. I learned today.
What is this strange crack in my face? What does this mean?
This isn't supposed to work this way.
I don't understand. What does this hex you put upon me?
It hurts, but it
joy
also doesn't hurt. A smile? What the fuck is that?
Oh, man. I just put down a perfect tile.
Oh, shit. Tim, do you have any final words before we move on?
No, I do not. Brooke, it was nice to hear you again.
You too,
Tim. Nice to have you back. See you guys next week.
Night, night.
On another exciting episode.
All right, next game to talk about is Time on Frog Island, developed by Half Past Yellow, published by Merge Games, released May 10th on Switch and Steam for $19.99. Terrible storm ravages the seas around you, casting your mighty vessel into the perilous rocks of a nearby island. You awake to find your ship in pieces, shipwrecked on a strange island filled with frogs?
Frogs?
What? Chris, tell us about your Time on Frog Island.
Okay, my Time on Frog Island. Well, I did talk about the preview of this before, but I've been playing a little bit more. So, yes, Time on Frog Island is basically where your unnamed sailor guy crashes, and basically it starts off like seeming like it's kind of a survival game, but really it's kind of a it's a point and click, but without the pointing and clicking. It's more like running around and grabbing things for people, the game.
Fetch Quest, so the video game.
It is kind of Fetch Quest, the video game, yeah. So the main thing about this game is that because your dude is like, I'm going to say French, just because he speaks in nonsense, but it sounds like it's with a French accent. And the frogs, like, don't say anything at all. They speak in basically pictures. So when you speak to a frog, it's kind of cool that this game communicates everything wordlessly, because you actually do kind of get a sense for things, like, very quickly. Like, it's a really good thing for, like, you know, communicating without words, which is what I'm trying to do right now. But let's say, for instance, okay, so your ship crashes, and you need to, like, kind of make yourself a little home away from home. So you have to get, like, your plant. There's a plant that this guy, for reasons that aren't explained at the beginning of the game, but there's, like, this kind of potted plant that he really loves. And you know, he can't find it when his ship wrecks. But if you travel nearby, you'll see that there's an artist frog who is painting it, not applying paint to it, but it is on a stand, and the and he's, you know, painting the plant like on canvas. And so you come up and tell the frog picture of potted plant, and he tells you, okay, picture of a bottle of liquor, and which is liquor with a really crudely drawn, like, kind of smiley face on it. Nice. It's kind of great. Yeah, and so you go back to the scene of the shipwreck, and you'll find that bottle. And so you grab that bottle and bring it back to the frog, and then the frog is like, okay, great, and then pops the bottle of liquor and then starts painting it instead, and then just kind of throws your plant away, and then you get to grab it and then put it where it needs to go. So that's like kind of like an unspoken tutorial on how to get this thing done. Your ship needs like about 5 different parts, and each of them is going to take you all over the island doing fetch quests to get certain parts to like either combine or, you know, reach different areas, all kinds of stuff. There's no inventory in the game. You carry one thing at a time over your head. There's no map of the game. You just have to learn what this island looks like, or, you know, make your own map. It's not a huge island, so you do kind of get a sense of it after a while. And yeah, it gets complicated. Like, there's basically, you know, there's things that you have to do to combine items. So one of them that I quite like is that actually your painter friend, the next thing that he wants is a blue worm-looking thing. And so you're like, okay, you can't actually find this thing, but what you can find are regular little white worms. And by the way, these little quote-unquote worms are about the size of your guy, because he's about knee-high to any of these giant frog people. So, you know, you eventually find like an orchard with, you know, some apple trees, and there are these, like, you know, little worms around, and if you happen to knock or place an apple in front of one of them, they eat it, and then they turn the color of that apple. And so now you got to find a blue apple so that you can make a blue worm so that you can give it to this frog in exchange for another thing that you need. So it's things like that. And like I said, they get increasingly difficult, but basically the point is to do fetch quests for frogs, and, you know, in some way that's going to benefit you in putting your ship together. The game operates on a day-night cycle, and at night, you know, and the cool thing is that at certain points of the day, like, frogs do travel around, and they do different things, and they even have different motivations. And eventually your character says, you know, He gives you the picture symbol for sleeping, and so you got to put together a fire and, you know, end the day, and then, you know, the next day everything, you know, will be maybe different. Maybe it'll be raining, and then that will change up the behavior of many of the things on the island. So it's kind of cool like that. Like, it actually, the type of day it is will change things and allow you to solve puzzles in a different way, or, you know, not at all, or, you know, sometimes exclusively. And like I said, the cool thing about the environment that you're running around on is that it's highly interactive. You can plant mushrooms in certain spots and get trampolines. You can pick up certain plants and get like this helicopter speed boost and just like motor across the island, because some plants act like helicopters on this place. And it's, again, none of it is explained. None of it is even like, you know, none of it's really even hinted at. The only thing you get really is that, you know, the action button, which is Y, will pop up, and that will do something. And you know, you're encouraged to try. There's no death in the game. If you fall into the water or off a cliff, then you just end up back at the shipwreck site, and, you know, at no real loss for time or anything like that. So you can pretty much do whatever you want and not worry about, like, consequences. The challenge, though, is figuring out what these frogs want and how to get it to them. So it's kind of cool that it's a point and click that's missing the thing that most point and clicks have, which is writing.
Well, does it work? It's $20. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I actually think this is an unusual experience, an unusual presentation, but it's so well done. It's well crafted, and clearly a lot of care went into it. So if you got that puzzle, you know, that puzzle game like mentality, and you want to try a different approach, this is certainly for you. Any action fans need not apply.
It sounds like it's got a little bit of a Animal Crossing vibe to it, with actual story and puzzles.
A little bit, yeah, and also the fact that like the animals do react to different times of the day. But an actual day is like about 20 minutes in this time, so it's not moving in real time or anything. Yeah.
Well, sounds cute. But next game to talk about is Anvil Vault Breaker, developed by Action Square, published by SK Telecom, released November 11th on Xbox Game Preview for $19.99, also available as part of Xbox Game Pass. The first season pass just launched March 30th and is available for $9.99. Anvil is a multiplayer co-op top-down sci-fi roguelike action shooter where you control characters called Vault Breakers to explore various galaxies that are crawling with monsters. Find relics inside vaults to increase Breaker's abilities to survive and fight on this godforsaken galaxy. But Purnell, I love that this is a multiplayer co-op top-down sci-fi roguelike action shooter. How many more descriptors can we get on this fucker?
I think you were just looking for an excuse to say it again.
Yeah,
because there's a lot going on with that freaking description. But I mean, honestly, I don't think it's inaccurate at all. I mean, they did, considering the gameplay itself is fairly straightforward, it really does cram a lot of like genre elements into it. But the idea behind the game is that you choose a character across, they're like Joe mentioned, they're called Breakers, and you choose from
quick correction, it is not $19.99, it's $24.99. The $19.99 price was with Game Pass, so that's what confused me. So if you have Game Pass, you save $5.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
There it is. So Game Pass, folks, but then again, as Joe would always say, you should probably have Game Pass. So
yeah, you should.
I mean, honestly, if you have an Xbox, I'm at the point where I can't fathom not having it now. Talk about a change from 2 years ago. I wasn't even off that 2 years ago. It was just I had a different reason for not wanting it, but it always had a good value to it to me.
But now Anvil's on Game Pass.
Yes.
So what is Anvil?
I'm getting to that. You got me on the side
track. I know. I'm trying to bring it back. God,
bring it around.
What's Anvil?
So you choose from one of the 13 different breakers. Not all are unlocked from the start, but you get a fair number of them to start with. That gives you a bit of a variety in who you can choose. They all kind of perform differently. They ultimately all use firearms, but at the same time, they attack in a way where, like, you have your main attack, and then which is done by like you're using the right thumbstick in a top-down fashion, aiming and then striking with it. But then they also all have four different functions or abilities, which are tethered to the bumpers and the trigger buttons. Usually one of them involves some sort of like dodge maneuver, which can ultimately hurt people too, depending on how things go later. But then the other three are specific types of attacks that are meant to kind of give these characters their own sort of pizzazz or what makes them unique in that sense.
From each other.
Oh, God! Oh, damn. So once you choose your actual breaker, you get to choose between one of four different locations that you can go to. I'm not sure. I can't speak for if they're going to change that later on as far as adding more, but the three or the four that you can choose from are the Zerni Galaxy, the Symphonia Galaxy, and the Campanella Galaxy. Zerni Galaxy is special because it's meant to be played, solo challenge mode, and it has five locations that you go to, and I'll talk about what locations are in a second, but it has five different locations, and you have low-tier relic acquisition, so it's like basically meant to get you started and off the ground running. Symphonia Galaxy is seven different planets, and the relics that you can find are a little bit more powerful there. And then the last one, being the Campanella, is seven planets, but they're all essentially a boss rush. And again, I'll explain in a second, but it's a boss rush one after another, and you get pretty much the best loot in the game that you can get is pretty much found here. If you can beat it, good luck. And then there's the season challenge mode, which is essentially just something that they set up for that particular time where you run through the gauntlet that they create for you. Enter,
that's the there's fourth like three planet, levels by the way, because you're like, there's four planets, and then you named three. So that seasonal is the fourth one.
Well, the problem is I don't want to call it a planet because it's not a galaxy. It's the season challenge mode. It's a different mode. because it doesn't even play like these other places. Because there, you go in and you have to choose from one of three different gates. There's like easy gate, a normal gate, and a hard gate. And each one has different perks. So you'll choose which ones you want to go to, which ultimately is you're buying for different perks. And you're also accepting that for each one you go to, depending on what you choose, it'll be harder. Now, to actually describe the gameplay when you go to these places, again, top-down mode, and there's one of two types of environments you can end up in. There's exploration. What exploration is like a large-scale map that you run around on, and mobs will just kind of spawn and give you the business, or attempt to give you the business. And you will use your firearms to pretty much blast into oblivion, and start, well, as your special abilities as well. You'll destroy objects to get, like, general currency items. And as you're running around, you'll come across, like, these little red cubes that are floating. And each of the cubes offers you three items from which you can purchase. They're all pretty much relics. There are a lot of relics in this game. And they augment your gameplay style in a variety of really cool ways. Early on in the game, I kind of found myself feeling like there was never a time where I would come across a relic shop that didn't have something I wanted to spend my currency on. Joe and Carnage teased me about that. They were right to do so, because later on, once I started getting pickier and more decisive of what I wanted my character to play like, I started vetoing stuff in favor of the stuff that specifically helped me along. Some relics have tiers or levels, which means you can buy the same relic multiple times, bolstering its skill level to a certain point, and some are pretty much one and done. To give you an example, you might find a relic that just lets you get extra money at the beginning of each planet. Can't upgrade that one. Once you get it, it is exactly how it is. But then one of my favorite relics was a bullet that increased your attack power by 30% and your speed by like 40%. And then each time you upgrade it, it increased the percentage by like 20%. So eventually my character was just like spitting up bullets like crazy with killer attack power, which was a great time. Now, the beauty of what I just described there is that's just one relic. In one run, you can end up with a lot of relics. And then all of your abilities that you have as you explore the planets, you are at the beginning of each planet area. And for the record, a planet is just one stage in that area. At the beginning of each one, you also get the opportunity to upgrade one of your abilities with a random roll of three different types of augmentations. And those can stack with your relics to the point where your DPS, damage per second, can explode. Like, there's some crazy-ass numbers. I think by the time I was done playing, I was hitting like 12,000 or so, and that was just on my first like set of like med levels playing the game and learning the ropes. And it was fun to just see those numbers chalk up. But that's the exploration phase. And eventually, once you've killed all the enemies, you move on to the next zone. And the next zone type is the boss mode, which is literally a shop at the entrance where you can buy new guns, potentially, or like a cheap heal and ability augmentation. And then the game will kind of roll through a series of different bosses that can spawn there amongst a sea of the ones that can exist in that galaxy. And they'll show up, and it is a spectacle of ridiculousness because bullets are everywhere, abilities are everywhere. You will get your ass kicked the first few times when you're learning the ropes, not realizing what bullet hit you. Not because the game doesn't show you, but literally because there's a lot going on and you're not keeping
up. It kind of turns into a bullet hell at points. It's yes, really action-packed.
Yes, it is. It's a genuinely good time to play through. And when you beat the boss, you get a bit more of the in-game experience, which I'll explain shortly, and the ability to shop at a few more vendors, and then you move on. If you manage to complete an entire galaxy, then you will get EXP reward and the potential ability to keep one of the relics that you found on the board. And when I mean keep it, I don't mean you just have it at all times. But as you kind of do. Who am I kidding? Because once you
unlock it and for future use, yeah, and you can.
I played the game
too, you bitch.
That is true. You win this round, Buckethead. You are right. He did play the game too, and he enjoyed it too. It is a good game. But yeah, like Joe was saying, you unlock the relic as a means to equip it on your character before you even start a run. Early on, you only have one slot with which to do that, but as you beat the different galaxy, you unlock additional slots, which means you can have a total of up to four relics equipped at the beginning of a run, which is pretty handy because, you know, you come in there ready to kick ass, and you can focus more on upgrading those relics or upgrading other things by spending your money on different things. Now, I mentioned earlier the experience points that you earn on the runs. this isn't a typical type of game where each character has a level up pool and their stats go up or whatever. Nah, see, because this is one of those games that's like the season pass and stuff. So I have to explain the layout on how the currency works. You have, I don't know what the things are called, they're like these blue cubes. Crons. Those can be used. I'm gonna definitely go to you because you know all these damn things. The crumbs can be used to do a number of things. You can purchase additional characters once you've amassed enough. You can use them to purchase potential weapons that you can start a run with. Oh, I said, no, that's something else. I'll get to that in a second. But you can use to purchase different characters to run your game with. And that's mainly the main thing with that. Also cosmetics, but I didn't play with those because it costs a lot to upgrade, unlock the characters, so I'll save that for later, the cosmetic stuff. There are these, like gold crystals. They can be used in an upgrade tree. It's like minor upgrades you get, but they all add up over time. Like, you might get an upgrade that just increases your attack power by 1%, which, again, doesn't sound like much, but it adds up because each time you increment it up to a certain point, it adds 1% more. You do that for health. You can do it for damage reductions and health regeneration. There's a lot of upgrading that takes place there, and you'll earn those guys. And then the last thing is this, like, this sort of, like, this blue shit that can be used to unlock default weapons to start your run with. Like, for example, I changed my main gun for my favorite character from the homing handgun to the assault handgun, which has its own traits or whatnot to it. You can use it for that. And you can also use it to unlock different starting, like, remember the one, the ability augmentations I mentioned you can earn on some of the levels. You can use it to unlock those for a character, too. And then you can choose one of them to start your run with. It doesn't seem like much because, again, only one out of four, eight, 16 different ones you can have per character. But if you have a playstyle you have in mind, it's nice to kind of get that ball rolling from the start. For example, one of my characters had an ability where you can summon a giant mechanical worm out of the ground that starts like thrashing about and like is also a good distraction for enemies. But I came across a really cool perk that allows that worm to heal you while he's out of the ground. And then I had another perk later on that I found that allowed my cooldown for using it to go down so much that I just kept infinitely spawning the things.
Yep.
So that I always had a healing station on the board, which was kind of nifty. So when I got my ability to have one skill unlocked, I didn't even need to unlock the other skills because I knew the one I wanted to start with was the ability for my worm to heal me because that's the playstyle I was going for with that character. Of course, someone else is going to have a different playstyle. They use a different starting item, yada, yada, yada. You know the deal. So that's pretty much how all the upgrading and unlocks work, with the exception of the general experience points you get from beating planets. There is a sort of progression bar that exists on the game. And for all the currency you get, or once you, as you level up, gain more rank points or VP points, you'll reach new ranks. Now, some of the ranks are accessible to everyone. So say, for example, rank 2 and 3 and 5 and 6. When you reach those ranks, you'll get a reward, such as 5, you know, upgrade points or a breaker point, which is the thing you use to unlock the default, you know, starting skills and stuff. But then there's other ones, such as the first rank and the fourth rank and seventh rank and so on and so forth, that you can't just get. Like, you won't be able to access those rewards unless you purchase one of the premium passes in the game, which Joe mentioned earlier for that price point.
We'll go into the season passes and what's included with them when we talk about the pricing and our decision.
Now, what I will say, though, about that is anybody who's followed me for a long time knows that I'm generally the guy that's like, nope, don't do passes. Nope, don't do any of that kind of stuff. Just give me a game and leave me alone. As a person who's like that, as we were playing the game, I was genuinely having fun with it, and I'm not missing the premium stuff. But if you really get into the game, you find yourself wanting that stuff. It is a lot more things you can utilize in the game that can make your play experience a little bit better. But I'm stating that as a way to say it's not a requirement to enjoy this game. You can have fun with it without it. You do get currency in a way that increments and allows you to actually unlock a number of cool things. You can actually have fun and get your own play style running. And also, of course, co-op with other players. And I didn't even mention the fact that the season campaign has its own rewards tree, where instead of being based on just general accumulation, it's based on how high your challenge level gets. Earlier, I mentioned that the gates are divided up by easy, medium, and hard, with the enemy level increasing with depending on which gate you choose. that is the tier, the rating that they choose to determine what rewards you're allowed to get. So, for example, if you die on a stage where the boss, where the enemies were like level 70, then you don't get the level 70 reward. But if the previous stage enemies were level 60 and you beat that, you'll get all the rewards up to level 60 on the challenge track. Now, if you do that same thing,
Carnage said he got up to like 140, something ridiculous.
Oh, Carnage was freaking beast mode in this damn game. Like, I...
Yeah, he won't shut up and chat about it. Yes, Carnage, you carried us.
hey, man, we did some work, too. I was swimming those worms. Yes, we did.
Your worms did the work.
They're my worms. That's the damn job. They're on my payroll. They're my worms. But yeah, the game ended up being a lot of fun. And then I saw, like, talking to Carnage, I'm like, so, what do you think of the game? Do you feel as though the game has fairly, you know, like lengthy, like longevity, like more playability? Because, you know, I put my time in, but I'm not longevity main in this case. And Carnage goes, oh, I've maxed out like every damn character. the amount of time that man put in this game floored me. But it also was a very clean indicator that not only did he put a ton of time into it, but he was ready to come back for more to help a bunch of scrubs experience the game too. That showed me that I was already having fun with the game, but there was potential for the fun to last for a longer period of time should I be the type to finally sit down and, like, you know, not jump to like game 5,000 instead of just stick with game 4,999. so this game is a lot of fun. Playing it with you guys when we were having the multiplayer session was fun. I was ready to go to bed earlier when we started the match because I was already tired from my day. And I said, no, I'll do one more run. Let me unlock another skill slot for this character. Because, quite frankly, I was enjoying myself and I wanted to play with people while they were willing to play it.
Yeah, we put a couple hours in that together. It was a good time.
Yes, it was. And I do feel like it did the job to give me the feeling that this game has some legs. I would like to know what their plans are as far as like seasons go, if they plan to expand the different levels more or add more worlds or anything like that. But as it is now, and the knowledge that it is still kind of like growing, like it's not like final build or whatever. Yeah, right?
It's still technically in game preview state on Xbox. But it is basically a fully playable game. It has achievements. It has everything that you would look for. It's just, there's more coming. The game right now is $24.99. What are your thoughts on it?
I honestly think it's a solid buy. And honestly, I forgot to mention one last thing regarding unlocking the characters, because I only learned about it today while, you know, instead of getting off my tuffet and looking through the menus. So I mentioned earlier that individual characters cost 1,000 crom to unlock. As far as accruing the crom, it's actually, they make it fairly easy to do in a sense, because one thing we didn't realize is that for every character that exists in the game, they have their own little like challenge task list, and the challenges themselves aren't complicated. It's literally just like beating a planet with that character or beating this area with that character, and each one of those awards you with crumbs. If you can complete all the challenges with one crumb, with one character, that gives you enough crumbs to unlock a character right there. So you can pretty much play through as one character, and through using that character, unlock the means to buy a new character, which means you'll never really be locked out of having access to new people as long as you play around and get good with the characters you have access to. So it's pretty straightforward stuff. It's not bad. I think it's a solid buy it title.
Yeah, I can agree with you on the buy it verdict. I think it's a lot of fun. It's definitely better if you have friends. Playing solo isn't as good. The game is just really hard if you're playing solo.
We should mention this too, because I wanted to mention that because you mentioned the solo part. I think Carnage mentioned also that this is one of those games where you can kind of just like go into the game and say search for party members and it'll dump you into a random group of people if you don't have anybody.
That's called online matchmaking, Pernell. Lots of games have that.
Hey, not every game has it. You got to mention that shit. All right? I'm old, motherfucker.
The two premium passes there's a premium pass and then a premium pass boost package. The pass itself is $9.99. That's the one that gives you like every third or every fourth reward in the season. This gives you all of them, so you're not missing out on anything. It also gives you 1,000 cron, so you can buy a new character, and it gives you 5 breaker points. Is that worth $10?
You already know my answer to that. I'm cheap as shit, so I'm sticking with the game. But
you're sticking with the game.
I'm sticking with the game. But if you're the type of person who wants to come out the gate, and that's like an hour or two of your life that you're like, okay, I'm okay with spending that money for that, then go for it. I mean, it's just literally kicking the pants to get started quicker as far as some of those extra things go. But
actually, the kick in the pants to get you there quicker is the $24.99 bundle, which has the premium pass. It has the 1,000 krons. It gives you 10 breaker points instead of 5. It also gives you a new toy worker, the little minion that follows you, and it gives you 20 ranks on the season pass, which can be a lot of loot.
Yeah, that's a time saver in that sense, because 20 ranks, it'll take you time to get 20 ranks and just from playing the game. So
yeah, that's a lot of time saving there.
So in that case, Eric, goes to show you right there. Like, we played for a good 5 hours, or probably like maybe 4 hours yesterday, and I feel like I only got to like rank 9 or 10, if that. I might be exaggerating, which just goes to show you, 20 ranks is a decent chunk of time saved just to have that stuff unlocked. But yeah, by the same token, though, like, that's also just less you have to unlock. So you might be like, well, I want to spend the time unlocking because I love this game so much. So it might even be worth just saying, start the game for a little bit, play around to see how you feel about the actual incremental gains. If you feel as though it's going up quickly enough that you just want to enjoy playing the game to earn those levels, then that's fine. But if you're like, I'm enjoying this, but I want this shit now, then I think you'll see for yourself right there that it'll be worth your money.
Well, then, in the end, it looks like it would be a $50 investment for the game, the season pass, and the boost. Do you think it's worth it for this? Are you comfortable giving basically a $50 package for this, a buy it?
Honestly, not so much for me, because I'm the type of person where it's like, I'll just play around with it and have fun with what they're giving me from the jump from buying the game. So
you're good with 25, like, but that's about
right.
It. Hey, works for
that's
me.
That's me.
One other thing, it is on Game Pass. So if you're concerned, you don't know if it's going to be for you or not, just fucking fire up Game Pass.
There it is.
There you go. All right, next game to talk about is Best Month Ever, developed by Warsaw Film School Video Game and Film Producting Studio. let me run by that one more again. Warsaw Film School Video Game and Film Production Studio, published by Klebator, released May 5th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $19.99. Take part in a roller coaster of emotions with Louise embarking on a road trip of a lifetime through the late 1960s USA, trying to show her son Mitch how to navigate the often cruel modern world. Your choices matter. Brooke, what is going on in Best Month Ever?
Ooh, what a game to come back with after 3 weeks off the show. This game is doing a lot. Like, I'm glad we already talked about the Warsaw Film School thing, because I was going to open this up and just be all cheesy and say, oh, I want to say this is a fantastic game, but I can't because it's so much more than a great game. It's a great piece of media. I was really going to say that, but now I'm not going to. Don't worry. But like, seriously, this game is really, really impressive accomplishment as a game. Like, within an hour, I was like, who the fuck made this game? This is nuts. It works awesome as a game, but it's also just a really, really great piece of modern, gritty, Southern Gothic literature. Like, not that it's just like a visual novel or just narrative game where you're just making choices. It's got a lot more going on than that. But like, if you ever enjoyed Flannery O'Connor's stories, any of her stuff, you'd love this game. You know how when you watch, I'm gonna go out on your limb here, I don't know if anybody's gonna feel me on this one, but you know how when you watch the anime Erased, you think to yourself, wow, this could be even more successful, not as an anime, but just like a book or a movie or something. Like, this is just an awesome story and it happens to be an anime. That's how I feel about this game. It happens to be a game, but it's just a really incredible piece of media that is just a great story. But unlike Erased, where you're like, hey, this could be an anime, this could be a movie, this could be a show, this could be a series of books, this could be a novel, this piece of media actually feels like it's exactly the type of media it needs to be to maximize effectiveness. Like, this is kind of like a choose-your-own-adventure story plus so much more gameplay-wise. This game, let me just keep talking about why I like it so much. This game, if the kids we were The Kids We Were is a game that Chris and I reviewed together months ago for the show. We both gave glowing reviews for this story, which was no surprise because it's won awards for its story. Man, if that game won awards for its awesome writing and storytelling, this game should win like 10 more awards in that game. And then he needs to win 2 more awards for having a bunch of actual gameplay and variety and just like tasks and controls than you imagine. This game is doing a hell of a lot. So I'm just going to describe... Let's jump in here. I'm going to describe the opening scene here to set the pace. If you don't want any spoilers for this game at all, not even the first 5 minutes, plug your ears. But the following is basically the just the first 5 minutes or so where they're opening it up.
Not listening.
This game opens up and you're in your mom's car. You're like 8 or 9 and y'all have pulled up to the highway diner she works at. She's here because she just quit. She wants her final pay before the two of you hit the road for the best month ever. A last-minute spur-of-the-moment unplanned vacation for the two of you to spend some much-needed time together. Your badass mom, your badass single mom, marches into that diner. Her coworker is like, "What are you doing here tonight, Lou? It's my shift." You're like, "Nah, man, I quit. I'm here for my last paycheck. Where is the boss?" She goes, "Yeah, boss man's in the bathroom right now, and he did take a girly magazine in there, so it is going to be a while." So... you wait a little bit for your boss to finish up, come out of the bathroom. He says, "Hey, step into my office." His office has a window. And your son has climbed out of the car and is spying through the window to see what happens between you and your boss. So he's unfortunately watching while you demand your final pay for your boss, who says the only way he's forking over that kind of money is if you basically sleep with him. Now you're getting to your very first choices in the game. Will you respond to your boss with an insult? Will you smack him? Will you try to talk him down? Will you storm out in anger empty-handed? Now this is a tricky situation, but don't worry. This is just the tutorial slash intro to the game to show you how it works. Not to worry, because no matter what you pick for this part, your son will watch, but you will end up stealing your boss's pants, which he took off in front of you, dumping them out the window, hitting up the cash register on your way out to forcibly take what's rightfully yours, and setting fire to your boss's car. As you peel out of the parking lot.
This is the best month ever.
Dude, this game is sick. Like, give me like 2 minutes. I'm going to offer to buy Purnell this game mid-review. Just wait for it. As you peel out of the parking lot with your little boy after setting fire to your boss's car explodes in the distance, lighting up the night sky before you both gloriously, and you pat your son and you say, "Hey, we're getting out of here, kid. This is going to be the best month ever." And no matter where you think this game is going, no matter what you think is going to happen in this game, I guarantee you got no idea. I'm still shocked at all the places this game took me to. I never expected anything like what happened to me in this game. If one thing happened that was crazy, I would have never expected the other crazy things that happened to me. This game is bonkers, and it was really well done. I think it's just an incredible experience. I did finish it. I'm going to play it again, no doubt. It's not often that I finish a game all the way through for this podcast, let alone... plan to play it several times, even when I do love it, post-review. So that is quite the statement coming from me. Even when I do like the story of a game a lot, review game or not, even if I know there's multiple endings and plot twists depending on my choices, I'll usually only play through once and just maybe read about the other endings out of curiosity or whatever. Sometimes not even that. But yeah, a little bit more on gameplay here. Now you continue playing the game as the mom and the son, kind of trading off between the two characters depending on what's happening in the scenes as you go and what choices you're making. The choices you make as the mom set an example for your son. When he's watching, you make choices that will influence him to be tougher or more forgiving, less forgiving, more diplomatic, better at lying, better at telling the truth with a strong sense of justice or not, et cetera, et cetera. As you continue to make choices through the story, these contribute to begin to build stats for your son. Depending on what choices you make throughout the whole game, you'll end up with one of 9 different endings. Very different endings. And unlike a lot of other story-driven games that supposedly branch out into vastly different plot lines and endings, this game actually does. Like, it is an open spider web of things that could happen to you.
You mentioned there are 9 endings. The store page for this very distinctly says there are 9 unique endings. Ooh, in total.
Unique. Everybody take a drink.
Yes.
Are you drinking?
We got a unique.
Does everyone drink? Thank you.
Okay.
So you'll make choices as the mom, but you'll also split off and make choices as the son at different times. On your journey with your mom, she stops by her old family home, which is full of a bunch of old white people, which makes sense. She's a white woman. Once you get there, they make you go play with your little cousin while the adults talk. And then you get to make your first choice as the son, which is, what do you say to your cousin when he says, "You can't be my cousin, you're black"? And the game isn't trying to teach you the right thing to say to a question like that in that moment. This game isn't trying to give you a moral or after-school special story of what would the right thing for an 8 or 9 year old kid be to say to his cousin who just said something like that and then something else really nasty that he heard from his dad to you. If the game's trying to teach you anything, it's not the right thing to do. It's like, what would it be like in that moment to be that kid? What actually would be your options? What would you be armed with dialogue-wise as a kid of that age who is coming across that sort of thing for the very first time? Now, earlier, I compared this game, well, I labeled this game as an achievement in modern Southern Gothic gritty literature. Stay with me here, people. This game is not too emotionally heavy for a regular person to enjoy. It isn't preachy. It does have some serious themes in it that help us develop very real characters, like racial tension and stuff. But it's not hard to show up to play this game. You're not doing emotional homework trying to become a better person when you're playing this game. It's fun and immersive. It's got some very real, very fucked up characters in it. And in good Southern Gothic fiction, things can be as funny as they are dark and very easy to experience and read. Just straight up fun entertainment, even if the subject matter is disturbing. This isn't going to be like in Nightmare for Purnell over here. Is that what that game was called? Yeah. Where you were like, hey, too much fucked up shit has happened to this kid. I can't do this. I actually, even though it sounds like this is a similar type of game here, I don't find it to be that way at all. But I'm also willing to put my money where my mouth is and just buy Purnell this game to hear if I'm right, because I actually really want to know what Purnell thinks about this game. I kind of want to know what Purnell and Chris think about the game, but I ain't made out of money. So we're going to see. I kind of want to buy this for both of you. It's really good.
I can definitely say, based on how you were describing it, like a follow, like an addendum to what you said, like a lot of people want to hear what you would have heard what you said. It's like, oh God, I make a black kid answer a question like that. And they have that expression that you kind of put down, put away, like say, that's not the game. And I agree in the sense that I feel like I prefer when a game goes with an environment or a world. For example, this game is in the 1960s. Yeah. They present you with this environment. I'd have actually been offended if they tried to act like, oh yeah, everybody was great back then. There was no conflict or tension. Like, no, Rick, that's how the world was. And they portray the world as it was during the era their game takes place in. It's as simple as that. That's okay. We're on the same page here. And it's like, if the side effect of you playing this game is that, heaven forbid, you learn about something you didn't pick up in school, well, that's a bonus, but it's not a requirement. It's just a bonus.
Yeah, I'm really glad that you brought that up, because I actually cut down my review because I was trying to explain that better. But you really hit the nail on the head here. Like, it really is going with a world-building thing, and I think it'd be insensitive of a game set in the 1960s to be like that, to be like, hey, all the right answers are there. We have only to do what's right and believe in ourselves. You know, this game is showing you it's not that easy, and it's not going to focus on that for too long, but this is very, like, real character development. These are real situations that there isn't always a good answer to, and the choices you're making in this game sometimes mirror the fact that there isn't really a good choice to make in that situation, because the world's just a fucked up place, but not too fucked up for the game to be super fun. So this game does have a really strong narrative experience, one of the best I've ever experienced.
I thought you were going to take that trip. I thought you were going to say, but it's not too much to not be the best month ever.
Oh my God. I wish. Now I'm kicking myself. Oh, it was so good. I got to start sending you my review notes before the show starts. You can help me out here. But check Purnell's it out.
Going to be your editor.
I would love that.
Just for zingers.
I feel like right here, Brooke, you should say the name of the game 4 times, because people love when you say the name of the game. That meme with Leonardo DiCaprio pointing, that came from the heart. Came from the heart.
I love that. I'm going to say at least a couple more times. Okay, but outside of branching plot lines going in different directions based on your choices, there are also timed actions in this game. Sometimes you need to do different types of actions depending on the situation. Sometimes those are timed too. Sometimes you have to do several actions in a certain way before the timer runs out. So it's a lot like a Telltale game, except instead of bad, it's actually good. It is actually a really, really, really good and well-made game.
Well, then for $20, what is your verdict?
There's cool mini games in it too. I would recommend this game to anyone. I would recommend it to everyone. And I do. Unlike the kids we were, this is not just a linear story game that's incredibly well written that you could experience as a comic or a movie. It's a really, really open branch, like lots of freedom to make all kinds of different choices. My notes peter out from there. I had some stuff to say about that this is actually from the Warsaw School of Film. And then I just had something else I wanted to say, something in my notes here about how Warsaw's in Poland. That's where we got Witcher from, blah, blah, blah. Really good writing for both games. So yeah, that's it. Buy it. This is a really freaking good game.
And cool. A good release for Mother's Day week, too.
Oh, shit. I didn't even think about that.
Nice. Like, it's a mom. She's hugging her kid. It's perfect.
Perfect.
And it's going to be the best month ever, Purnell.
The best month ever.
Is that going to have to be the name of the best episode ever?
There you go.
Ooh, yeah, we probably need that.
Set the benchmark, but I'm okay with taking that chance. Let's do it.
We lie about every episode being good, so you might as well go all out for one. Next game to talk about is Ampersat, developed by Gatoroos and Inc., published by Gatoroos Inc. and Grab the Games. Released May 6th out of Steam Early Access for $9.99. A shooty, slashy RPG-y game mixing retro and modern sensibilities, a blend of influences from Gauntlet and Smash TV to Zelda and Angband. Ampersat is a handcrafted adventure with the appeal to roguelite fans, battle assy creatures, and colorful areas, and free letters. Oh my god, I can't talk. I have dentures, people. Free letters to return language to the village. Chris, what is going on in Ampersat?
Okay, well, here's another game that I reviewed the preview of, but it was like months ago, like sometime last year, I think, even.
It first launched in early access, we probably checked this out, or closer to launch.
Yeah, exactly. So we're coming back to it, and it's funny to follow up Brooke's review of like the best month ever, which sounds like the best game ever. Definitely, like, you know, the best summary ever. And the summary of Ampersat is thus: you are the @ and you got to rescue letters from towers.
Punctuation ever.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Story's not exactly deep, but yes, you will be adding people in this one. okay, that joke didn't land. Yeah, I was gonna say.
No, I got it. I got
thank
it.
You, thank you. Thank you. Don't at me. anyways, yes, you do play as the actual Ampersat, which is the symbol that you use to at people on Twitter when you want to annoy them. And so in one hand you have a magic wand, in the other hand you have a sword. The shoulder buttons that, you know, the left and right respectively, will cause you to shoot infinite magic bullets that are at first short range, but you know they have an overheat function, so you can only shoot so many at a time. And then the right hand operates the sword, which just does a swing thing, and that does melee damage up close. So it's basically like a twin stick shooter. You know, one stick controls the character, the other aims the reticule for the basically aiming at stuff. And you get your little laser line so that you don't have to just flail around. And yeah, the things that you are fighting are going to be the letters of the keyboard as they come at you. Each letter has different attacks, elements, strategies. Get poisoned by an R, basically. You know, it's like things like that. And so you have your choice. You have your hub village, which has an inn, a weapon shop, and an item shop. And really interesting stuff going on here, but I'll get to the hub in a minute. From the hub, you can access all of the dungeons, and you can actually access them right away. You can just choose which one you want to go into and, you know, start your dungeon crawl. You got, like, ice, fire, a pyramid one that's the, what is it called? The Ziggurat of Woe. that is the only one that you can't just simply leave once you get in. This is not a roguelike per se, because the dungeons are not randomized. And you can just leave them. If you go in, you can just go right back out the way you came. So you can play this as slowly or as quickly as you like. You can, like, go in slowly, gain levels, experience, gold, things like that. You know, power yourself up. Or you can just, like, get in there and get as far as you can and, you know, eventually die. And if you die, you just end up back at the back in the hub town with less experience and gold, but and actually you can lose like more than you went in with if you die too quickly, so you got to kind of watch that. But when your experience goes up, then you can take a trip to the inn where not only your life is restored, but you can also now choose. You rank up, you know, level up, and then you get to choose like. Basically, it's not a skill tree so much as a skill circle. It's like a skill like pinwheel. I don't know. Basically, yeah, and you can it branches out so that you can go through like levels 1 through 5 of a certain path, and you know the options get better. It's like things like get more health, also more resistant to confusion, and then the next one's like more health plus more resistant to poison. Or you can go into like the attack melee route and the attack like shooting with the wand route, things like that. So you can basically craft your punctuation to be a much better warrior and or magician or whatever you want to do. So it gives you a lot of freedom to kind of do that. And you can also store your gold so that if you lose your gold, then, you know, you've got some hidden literally under the floorboard of the inn. So that's kind of nice. And the other thing I kind of like is that the weapon shop, you go in and it gives you this random choice of 3 items that you can purchase. If you pay 50 gold, you can recycle that and it'll give you 3 brand new things that you can choose from if nothing in there looks good. So it's like that's what I've always, you know. I've had a love-hate thing with dungeon crawlers, like the Diablo type, because, you know, you get to the town and it's like, oh, we've got the, you know, you can buy like a stick for $20, which is what you can afford, but if you can save up $1,000, you can get a stick plus 5 of striking or something, and you're like, I'm never going to get $1,000, but then you go in, you get $1,000, and you're like, all right, time for my stick of striking, and then you go back, and now they've changed, like, all the, you know, the inventory's changed of the shopkeep, and now for like 10,000 you can get the, you know, the stick of I don't know.
Stankitude.
Do what?
The stick of Stankitude.
Yeah, the stick of Stankitude plus 15. And for 10,000. And you know, it's just like I really hate chasing that carrot. So it's kinda nice that the item shop gives you the opportunity to manually change its inventory anytime that you like. So, you know, you can roll something that you actually want to save up money for. I actually like that, you know, that should be in more dungeon crawlers to me. So anyways, yeah, the actual action is, like I said, you go into the tower, you take it floor by floor. Now, on each floor, while you're fighting letters, you're also rescuing letters. On each floor is a captured letter, and once you meet the requirements to free that letter, which is usually, you know, defeat these certain kind of enemies, defeat this many monster lairs, it's like Gauntlet in the sense that monsters come out endlessly out of lairs, and, you know, you got to destroy the monsters, but you have to destroy the lair to get rid of the monsters spawning constantly. And yeah, once you do that, free the letter, then that letter is now part of dialogue that you can have with people, and including the item shops. So it's an interesting mechanic in that until you rescue like the letter E, the letter, you know, M, the letter, you know, whatever, then everything that people say to you is just going to be blanks. Looks like, you know, Hangman games, right? Just like underscores. But as you unlock the letters, it puts those letters into the dialogue. So eventually you can kind of wheel of fortune your way into like guessing what people are trying to say to you. And that includes purchasing items and item descriptions. So you won't know what this $1,000 stick of blank does until you've rescued enough letters to, you know, see that it's, you know, the letter, the stick of smackitude or whatever. So that's a really interesting mechanic that you basically are, you know, dungeon crawling for Wheel of Fortune essentially. And that's how, you know, you buy your items and learn about the world that you inhabit. And again, all while you're just this piece of punctuation, which is great. And by the way, even though the graphics seem like they're going to be like ultra simplistic because the, you know, it's literally just things on the keyboard that are fighting and you're fighting, the actual dungeons are actually really nicely laid out. It's kind of a top down but kind of voxel graphic look. Everything's bright and colorful, especially the Tower of Madness. Literally, you step on these tiles to warp yourself across the dungeon floors, and they look like those Simon Says games from like the 90s. You know, like the with the four quadrants. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but anyways, yeah, it's a really cool little game, and it was really fun to, like, it's actually a really competent dungeon crawler, and I like that the graphics are just characters on the keyboard, because honestly, I've never seen a top-down game like this look good, so why not just throw away the attempts at making the top of a knight's helmet or something, and just throw in some punctuation? Like,
that works.
It doesn't matter.
Well, the game is $9.99. Oh, Pernell, did you get a chance to play this at all?
I did play around with it for a bit, yeah.
What are your thoughts?
I feel like this is a prime example of a game where it's worth noting that I saw this on the eShop before you mentioned it to me, and I was kind of like, not interested in this. And then I played around with it because I really wanted to be able to have some content to say with this when Chris got to review it, and I thought it was fun. Like, it's a good game. And it's a prime example of the fact that you don't have to go all, like, balls to the wall with your graphics or whatever to make a quality game. Because at the end of the day, fun is fun. And this game is definitely that. It's a good time. And yeah, I think it's kind of funny if you're unlocking, like you said, you're unlocking words so you can even know what the items at the shop are.
Yeah, like, exactly. I love that mechanic. Yeah. And yeah, it's not an ugly game. It's actually quite nice looking. It's just, you know, they took what could have been just like this this really blank sort of, you know, scene, like, oh, it all looks like it's taking place on notebook paper, haha, so we just took like notebook paper graphic and didn't bother drawing any walls or anything, you know, like,
well, keep
actually
in mind, it's not that I'm saying it's ugly. It's like the best way to describe it when I describe this is like there's another game that came out recently called like Super Mega Zero, and you're literally playing as the number zero, and you're running through, like, you're trying to defeat the kill screen. Like, the game has a style, and they're going for that style, and it's doing what they wanted to do. But if you see it on an eShop riddled with hundreds of thousands of games, it might be that game where you're like, I'm not sure how this looks. This doesn't particularly grab me. It's not that style. But then when you're playing it, it's moving. You're engaging with it as an actual piece of entertainment and media. That's when the actual shine shows. And I think this is one of those games that for me where like it took seeing it in motion and playing it to go, this is solid. This looks nice, you know? But yeah, it just didn't click for me the same way at the in the store.
It is true.
Well, the game is sitting at $9.99. It is out right now on Steam. I just checked. It looks like it's coming to the Switch May 20th. It might come to other consoles as well. I will have to get more information on that. But for $10, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm going to give it a buy it. In fact, I'm planning on buying it when it comes to the Switch.
Pernell, your thoughts?
Buy part two, Electric Boogaloo.
Sounds good. And if people are interested in more of kind of the same, I know there's an older game on PS4 and Steam, I think, called Brutal, with an A and at for the A in Brutal. And that's more like a third person action, but it's still like visually very similar. So give that one a look. I think we actually did an interview for that a couple years ago, if my memory serves me well, which it probably doesn't. But anyway, we got one final game to talk about tonight. That is called Rift Tracks, the game developed and published by Wide Right Interactive. Released May 5th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $9.99. Rift Tracks has been bringing their comedic commentary to movies for over 15 years. Now's your chance to riff along with them. Do you have what it takes to be the next movie riffing genius? Chris, what's going on in Rift Tracks, the game?
All right, well, at long last, us regular folks who have been fans of, you know, Mystery Science Theater 3000 and the like, and, you know, Rift Tracks, for as long as it's been around, now have the opportunity to make fun of bad movies. Yay! So this is a party game style game, strictly multiplayer, that that basically utilizes the formula that has brought us all so much joy over the last, you know, our entire lives. So in this game, so basically, if I just get this out of the way, you'll be able to picture what I'm talking about. It's like a Jackbox type game. So you got your one hub player, in this case, me with my Switch, but it is available on all the consoles, I think.
Yep, it's on everything.
Yeah. And everyone else is going to be playing with their device of choice, you know, their whatever can connect to the internet and punch in, you know, a code, you know, you're golden. And so when you're playing this game, you have two modes. One is where you can play Select a Riff, where basically they will play a clip from one of the classic Riff Tracks films. You know, you've got everything from, like, what is it? Wheel Gator is Mega Man X2. Roller Gator. I always get that mixed up. You know, Santa Claus and the Ice Cream Bunny. You know, all kinds of, like, classic, you know, Riff Tracks, just trashy movies that they've been making fun of and bringing joy to our lives with. And it will play you a very short clip, just one line, and basically it says your riff here. And in Choose a Riff, you basically are going to choose from a list of 6 different riffs that are randomized, and you're going to pick the one that fits best. So in that case, it's kind of an apples-to-apples situation, where, you know, if it's the funniest, then everybody votes on it. And if you choose, you can also have the original riff in there, which we found out quickly breaks the game. So I don't recommend that. So it has a thing called RiffBot where it actually puts in the original riff that was written, you know, in the Riff Tracks treatment of that film, which are, of course, a very funny, expertly written joke, whereas you're choosing from 6 random, like, no context type things. And depending on who you're playing with, that's just not going to fly. So yeah. Essentially, if you have the Riff Bot on, then the Choose a Riff is basically a battle for second place. So, you know, it's basically for if you just want to get the game going and nobody, like, wants to, like, really, you know, write anything down. Yeah, like I said, it's a, you know, a nice version of, like, a, you know, Cards Against Humanity or a, you know, funnier version of Apples to Apples. So that's that game. The real meat and potatoes of this two thing collection is the Write Your Own Riff. So then it will play a clip, and you have to write in, and the game gives you all kinds of parameters to choose from. It's actually pretty impressive. You can choose the amount of time that you have to write and the amount of time you have to vote. But basically, you write your own riff, and it will actually use text-to-speech to attempt to read your joke. We found out that there's some bugs in that. For one, good luck if you misspell a word. I tried to write WikiHow, and my thumb pushed too many K's, and it just spelled it out instead, and I was like, oh, it's joke ruined. And, you know, somebody else, like, put in an ellipsis, but it only read the first period, and so it, you know, instead of providing a pause like an ellipsis should, it just says dot, you know? Yeah. So it's not a perfect system, but so it basically will read out in text-to-speech the jokes, and depending on how funny people are, you know, you get voted for, and again, optionally, you can have the Riff Bot chime in with the original riff, and a good...
Or an original riff. They've written...
An original.
Thousands of riffs for this game, so you're not just going to get... Like, you might get a same riff repeatedly, but it won't be just the same one every time.
So... It's actually really nice to have that. But, and here's the cool thing too, is that you can have the riff actually read out by one of the Riff Tracks people. And they got the classic lineup. I mean, Riff Tracks encompasses, like, at least 10 people by now. But the original, you know, Kevin Murphy, Mike Nelson, and Bill Corbett are the riffers in this one. And you can either have that riff read out in their voice, which is a dead giveaway. That's how you know it's absolutely, you know, a professionally written professional joke. Or you can have them, their jokes also read with text-to-speech. And so it kind of throws it in there.
Evens the playing field.
Evens the playing field. Yeah, exactly. And so what ultimately ended up being the most fun game for us, because I played this with Joe and Carnage and some other folks, random and not random, you know, this weekend. What we ended up, I think, having the most fun with was pick your own riff, give people plenty of time to write and a little bit of time to vote. You can also add in a delay between readings so that people have a chance to laugh. I think that that's good. We should leave that on.
Yeah, definitely helpful.
Yeah. There's also a filter, you know, parental controls, let's call them, you know, a bad words filter. We didn't really stress test that one, but I will say if you're going to stream this one, you got to watch out because there's all kinds of trolls out there that like to take over things like Drawful and whatnot and ruin it.
The good thing is they do have Twitch integration, so you could require people to log in with their Twitch account so people can kind of be held accountable for what they say.
Exactly.
And then if all of this sounds slightly familiar, there's another game available called What the Dub that is basically this game without the Riff Tracks moniker attached to it.
Yeah.
And same developers. So they went back to the well, they got Riff Tracks on board with it, and now they're all pissing well water and it's delicious.
I wouldn't have put it exactly that way, but yeah, okay, great. Yeah, that works.
Yeah, that's
delicious well water. They're all taking golden showers.
Perfect. So yeah, and actually to add to that Twitch thing, the game also gives people the opportunity to simply play as an audience, and that is to say they can vote for the riffs that they like the most, and I think it's up to 12 people in-game or whoever you've got in a Twitch chat. So you can integrate this with your Twitch.
Thousands or hundreds of people through the Twitch voting.
Not on my streams, but yes.
Yeah, not on our streams, but I watched Riff Tracks stream the game themselves, and they would have hundreds of votes for each of the replies. It was really cool.
Yeah, so great game with streamer integration if you're a streamer, which, you know, if you're listening to this, there's a 70% chance that you are. so yeah, really cool. Like I said, the only things about it, so I've got a couple little things, you know, here and there about it. The pick a riff did kind of feel a little flat. I'm not sure if I should have just played it more or something like that, or removed, you know, the actual, you know, riff bot from that. But Write Your Own Riff definitely ended up being the better game, which, you know, means that in order to play the game to its best, you actually have to come prepared to, like, write in a real joke.
Yeah.
But I will say, even people who are uncomfortable with it, like, eventually got a lot more comfortable with it. And some people just went straight up, you know, kind of nuts with it. So that's kind of nice. Dick
jokes right out the gate.
Oh, yeah, for sure, for sure. And, you know, hey, it's the, you know, if that's your audience, that's your audience. That's what's going to make them laugh. The other thing that I was, like, that I'm a little bit, like, about, but, you know, it's a $10 game, so I'm not going to complain too much. There's incidental music in it that was written by Kevin Murphy, who, as you know, in Mystery Science Theater 3000 at one point was Tom Servo and also Bobo the Ape. Professor Bobo, sorry. I forgot about his credentials for a second. Anyways.
Professor Bobo. He just corrected himself.
He's
smirching the name of Bobo. Professor Bobo.
Professor Bobo.
God damn it.
Yeah, yeah. But anyways, Bobo. He wrote all this great incidental music, and I think some of it might be songs that he's written before, but, you know, like, repurposed. I honestly am not as familiar with his discography, but I will say, as soon as I heard the music, I was like, oh, this sounds like Kevin Murphy. And then sure enough, he was in the credits as the music composer. Would have really liked that or something like that to be the music while people are writing and voting, because what happens is that the writing and voting music is entirely just the instrumental version of Jonathan Coulton's Riff Tracks theme song, which is okay, but you hear that song more often than anything else in the entire game. So it would have really been nice if they could have, like, mixed up the soundtrack a little bit, like maybe randomize an instrumental passage. I would have loved to have voted for, you know, riffs on, like, an instrumental version of, like, the Samurai Cop song or something like that, which, by the way, is a banger. You should look that up on, if you're not familiar with Samurai Cop, I recommend watching it and then listening to the theme song in isolation because it's hilarious.
Oh Lord.
But yeah, I would say that, yeah, the music, the fact that they leaned so hard on the Riff Tracks theme song instrumental version when there were even other songs present on the soundtrack was a little disappointing to me, but that's
my gripe musically is that they didn't get a song long enough. So it, like, ends and then it slow fades in back to the beginning, and it's awkward, when it happens. And if they would have just chosen a 2 minute long song instead of a 35 second song, I mean, that problem would have been avoided.
And that stuff does kind of matter because everybody has to listen to this game. You have to listen to the visual cue or the audio cues, sorry. And you have to listen to like the riffs being read off. So it's like, you know, this game absolutely has your ears. So, you know, they could have taken a little more care in providing like better background music selection or at least like, you know, randomness or longer tracks. Yeah, anything would have been better than the same like, you know, half a chorus of the Rift Tracks theme song.
No hate
to Joko. He wrote a fine song for them. It's just that's not the best utilization of it.
Well, the game is $10. What are your thoughts?
Oh, it's great. I would absolutely say buy it. Definitely, you know, you should buy it for two reasons. One is to have some fun making fun of bad movies. It's actually easier than you think. And it kind of like, I don't know, bad movies are such a great uniter of people that I really want to get this game going in a room with some people when we're allowed to do that. Or, you know, just getting like four people together even would be kind of nice. But and the game, by the way, supports up to six. I didn't mention six local or online. But also buy it to support its existence.
Yeah.
We need stuff like this. No hate to Jackbox, but I honestly, you know, Jackbox is about a 70% miss for me. So the fact that this is out with like a much more kind of laser focused deal in a a scenario that I'm used to, which is making fun of movies. Absolutely bless it.
Does this have any similarities, like as far as like scratching the same itch as that one Xbox 360 game from ages ago? Was it called? Was it Seen It or
you know what I'm talking about,
Joe? The game
I've heard of Seen It, but I don't know it.
Seen It is more like a trivia game.
So it's not less about making fun of it, but it's still they still both kind of tap into like, hey, do you like movies and like the idea of like attaching to the appeal of movies, good or bad?
Yeah.
Oh, by the way. I just want to say, brag on myself just for a second. This game does have achievements and trophies, even though it's a Switch game and we don't care for that. but I actually managed to get the achievement of getting zero votes for an entire 5-round game.
Yeah, you got that legit too. Like you worked hard for that one.
Legit wrote my best jokes I could come up with, and every single one got just goose egg.
I love how Joe's like, you worked hard for that. Like, when he said that, I for a second was like, am I misinterpreting this achievement? Because you don't work hard to miss.
I was going to say, I mean, it's hard work to be this tepid, I suppose.
It was fun, though.
I've been there, though, with games like that.
I love games like this. They're such a blast to play with a group of friends, whether it's online or whether you're actually in person doing it responsibly and safely. I love these party games.
Yeah.
I'm just chuckling at the thought of like this happening to Chris, because knowing Chris's, you know, temperament, I just picture him being like, oh, that sucks. That was a good joke. Like, I don't know why people didn't pick it. So you actually snapped it, because like I played games like this where people don't choose my joke. I'm like, what the fuck, man? I worked hard for that quip. No one liked it.
Definitely, you got to know the humor that you're with. Like, if you're super dirty and you're in like a clean environment, your jokes are going to go over like a fart in church.
Oh, for sure. But it doesn't stop me from going, how in the hell did none of you find this funny? You're all broken.
Well, Pernell, you should have fucking played with us, huh?
Next time. Next time.
I mean, Gadget, I got the game now, time. So we can do it again. My cat is destroying my office. Anyway, the old cat, like not the joke. New cat. It was like, the way I approach it is that I am much more interested in seeing what other people write than actually, you know, winning or losing. I'm more like, okay, time to see some jokes. I am ready. And, you know, every time somebody got like two or three votes, I was just like, you know, applause, because that's really super cool. So yeah, I'm kind of like not only not competitive, I kind of work against myself actively. I appreciate everybody else so much.
If I'm tanking, I'll go all out. Like I'll.
But I love y'all know from this show that I love to like make little jokes and like little one-liners and stuff. Like I'm very, very into riffing. So it's like I was trying. These were my best jokes, and like I said, I did win.
You won a game too. Yeah.
Yeah, I won a game. And I think you won the game as well, right?
Yeah.
That one person came in and swept us all.
Yeah. it was good, though. It was a good time. We're going to have to try to organize some more nights like that.
For sure.
But that is it for this episode. We made it through. How the fuck did we take a 7-review episode and stretch it to 2 hours?
I had the best damn episode ever.
Just talented, I guess.
Best month-long episode ever.
Best month-long, yeah. Oh, jeez.
Welcome back, Brooke. It's great to hear your voice again.
Thanks, dude.
Welcome back. Welcome back.
Yes, we are very happy that you're back.
I'm happy to be back. I told Joe I don't know why, but I just am.
I don't know why you're happy to be back either. Like, you realize you're stuck with us, right?
Yo, yeah. How about you don't make her question these choices and just let her go with it, okay?
You
know what else we're going
to
let her go with? Final words. Brooke, give us the final words.
Nah, I'm out.
Those are words. You gave them.
She hung up.
Wow.
Does it work? Can I come back when I hang up? Oh, hell yeah. I'm going to do it again.